Welcome to another edition of Let's Talk History, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Now, here's your hosts, Lexington History Museum Executive Director Mandy Higgins and WUKY's own Alan Lytle.
Boy, have we got some history to talk about today. Hello again, Mandy.
Hi, Alan. It's going to be a good podcast.
Oh, yes. And we've got some great news to talk about as far as what's happening with the History Museum.
Yeah, it's, you know what? I feel like fiscal year 27 is going to be a good year for the Lexington History Museum. We have a few things. First, if you have not made it down to see us, our Intersections, 250 years of Lexington history exhibit will be closing very soon, in the first couple of weeks of August, and we'll be turning it over to a new exhibit, which we're very excited about. And we'll talk about it in a later podcast.
There's a teaser for
There's a teaser. We also have a number of really exciting events coming up. So the last week of July, we have students in for the first couple days of the week with the Bridge Initiative, who will be learning about and exploring different kinds of art pieces and having the museum as a backdrop, which will be great. We have our next history happy hour, and this will be on August 5th at 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. At the Willow on National Avenue. And Aaron and I will be talking about Lost Lexington.
Oh, wow.
So fun stories about some places that are no longer with us but are a huge part of our history. You think the Phoenix Hotel, the Cross Keys Tavern, maybe the Association Track. So really fun stories. And of course, History Happy Hour is a great time. You can get yourself a beverage of your choice at the bar. It's free, but we do ask that you register in advance. And there's information on our social media about that. And then the biggest news of all.
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
We don't need roads. We are so excited to launch the Lexington History Museum's signature fundraising event, Back to Lex History, presented by Red Mile, on August 29th from 7 to 10 at Limestone Hall. So you can get tickets online. $100 each. Your ticket supports our mission. It also provides you with a couple of drink tickets, some bites. We'll have a great DJ doing era-themed music from 1955, 1985, and the future. We would love to see you in some costumes. So, you know, break out that Marty McFly jacket or whatever you were wearing around town in 1985.
I've got mine, and you guys are going to be blown away by it.
I can't wait. We also have we'll have some great auction items that we'll talk a little bit about in maybe a future podcast. And we're really, really excited about the venue. So Limestone Hall is the third floor of the old courthouse. Those of you who have been friends of the museum for a long time know that that used to be our home.
Yes.
So we're so excited to go back to where we were, to invest in the future of the museum, and to do so with some really great partners across the community who are making this possible. We'd love to see all of you there. Mark your calendars, August 29th, 7 to 10 p.m.
And this is going to be a one-of-a-kind experience for anybody that comes.
Yes. So not only do you get to dress in costume if you choose, dance to period music, but there will be experiences within those 1955, 1985, 2045 zones. Think Pac-Man on a big TV.
Waka, 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 waka.
I've had my daughter playing it, and she is very frustrated with the 1985 technology. Just put that out there for all of you. Joyland may make an appearance, thinking about what the future of Lexington could be, what your future could be in Lexington, and of course, all of the great things, 360 photo booths and fun and excitement.
Oh, just a party, a party.
Absolute party.
Yeah, yeah. And that is, if people want tickets, and they're going to want tickets, where do they go?
They can go to lexhistory.org, and that on our banner, we'll send you to the ticketing site. If you are a member of the museum, there's a discount. If you are a If you receive our emails, you'll be getting a direct link to purchase tickets. You will also see this all over our social media, so you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn. And then come see us in person. It'll be great.
Yeah, and you're going to hear about it, too, on our radio station, WUKY.
Yes, we are so grateful for WUKY's partnership in helping us get the word out and helping bring Lexington history to our community.
Boy, and when you were talking about going back to Lost Lexington, mm-hmm. that segues into... Let's get into it for today and our special guest.
Yeah, so today we want to talk about something that was lost and found in Lexington with our special guest, Eric McAnallen, which I will get to, you will get to hear from Eric in just a minute. We're going to set the scene beforehand, though. Lexington, as everyone knows, is 251 years old this year, founded in 1775. But Lexington itself, the area around it, that is Fayette County, is much older and has had people in and out of it for millennia. We, when we tell this history, often start in about 1770, when individuals, particularly men, came into the area through the Cumberland Gap, exploring central Kentucky, thinking about expanding settlement. And many of those folks were doing so because they had land warrants from earlier colonial battles, particularly the French and Indian War. One family that is well known in Lexington history, both in the earlier part of it and throughout our history, even through today, is the Bryan family. And Captain William Bryan. Very famous story at Bryan Station of women. I think we've told the story on this podcast before.
I think so, yeah.
Women, the station is sieged at the end of the Revolutionary War. It's women who are brave and go out and collect water and make a diversion. And
they often are.
They often are. God bless the women. But that Bryan family also has a southern Fayette County, northern Jessamine County story that Eric has spent 3 years or more uncovering. And he's here to tell us a little bit about it. Hi, Eric.
Hey, good morning, Mandy.
Good morning. So... Eric likes to tell people that he's just a curious guy and that he got involved in doing this work and was like, oh, it'll take me 2 months and we'll have it all done. 3.5 years later.
It's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe. Tell us a little bit about the Bryan family and this cabin that you are a part of researching.
What started this, Mandy and Alan, is a dear friend of mine, Jason Justice. He's a home builder. He procured these logs from a gentleman, Jerry Hayes, back around 2008. And he took these logs, put them in storage in his place at Woodford County, and brought them out in 2023 and started reassembling these logs that this Jerry Hayes had saved. And as research that I conducted found out later that it was located at the crossroads of Clay's Mill Road and Brandon Road, Jessamine County. And Mr. Hayes had created the Pioneer Village at Renfro Valley. This was his dream, and he basically ran out of money. And this last cabin that was disassembled at that location was in storage. And he meeting with Jason, he passed it on to Jason, and he said, maybe you can do something with them. So that's where it all started. Back in 2000 is when Jerry disassembled this cabin that was located over there off Brandon Road. So how I got involved was just being a friend with Jason. I've been in real estate for 29 years. I build homes, and we're just close friends. So I was watching him along this process. And like I said, it was spring of 2023. And he didn't have any blueprints. He didn't have any schematics. We didn't even know what these logs were. What they formerly looked like. And so through that process of him assembling these logs, like a Lego set, I had just asked him, I said, where eventually are you going to put this cabin? He said at the front of his farm, there on Bryant Road at the intersection of Winchester Road. And I said, why at the front? He said, well, there's an old cemetery there and I can't develop around it. So I'll just put it up there. And just being curious, I said, well, who's in the cemetery? He said, I don't know. I've lived here for 20-some years. It's just a cemetery that's been fenced off. So we went up, looked, and days later uncovered some brine tombstones. So that's what really started all this. You have these logs that we eventually found a year later, its location, the Brannan, Clay's Mill intersection, that was associated with the Brine family. And then here we are on property at the northeast end of Lexington of that area over at Clay's Mill that was Brine related. We just stared at each other. I said, what's going on here? You know? So that's when I started the research, and I told Jason once we fully knew exactly, pinpointed that location, I could run title. And then we'll get provenance, and it'll just take me 2 months, like I said. And it'll be, you know, we'll get this thing wrapped up. And what I dove into is just phenomenal. The early years of Kentucky, the founding, the history, just the brutality. Then you had pre-Revolutionary War, where the boundaries were established for those soldiers who fought for King George III in the French Indian War. And the significance of those individuals, where this cabin sat. General Adam Stevens was on George Washington's staff, and the property next to it was Alexander McKee, who stayed loyal to the crown during the Revolutionary War. And his land was actually, through an inquiry of escheatment in 1780, was taken from him. And that was used as the endowment for Transylvania University. Who knew, right?
Who knew?
And Daniel Boone was one of those jurors. And so it's just amazing. And the coincidence of how the Brine family started out at Brine Station. How did they end up over on, you know, that's on the North Elkhorn, as locals know. And then how did he end up over on the South Elkhorn? And so that was really the crux of the 2 years of researching and trying to locate the deeds, mm-hmm. and the transfer of ownership and these surveys. And again, you just have to understand from 1774 to 1780, especially, we were at war.
Right. Right. So you can imagine that everything is sort of a mess in the record. But before we talk about the deed research, can you tell us just a little bit about the cabin itself?
Yes. So, you know, again, trying to share in 3.5 years in a short period of time, we actually located Dr. Rochner out of University of Louisville. Her specialty is dendrochronology. It's the study of tree rings, the dating. And her research went as far as actually determining the cutting date of those trees and those species that made up the logs of the cabin. And so she brought some of her top students down, and they performed their analysis and their cores on specific logs throughout the cabin. A really nice, you know, wide spectrum. And it took about 5-6 months to get those returns. And that was very important, Mandy, because we wanted to date the logs with the research, where it came from, whose boundaries that it was originally located on. And it was identified there was pre-statehood 1792 logs. And we have that full report. And it's just fascinating, of course. And so that was one little check mark, you know, of getting that provenance, mm-hmm. you know, on this cabin. So that was a really big deal, really.
And the cabin is also distinct because it is two stories.
Yes. So... once we did locate Jerry, and he showed me the location, and he told us the time period, is I went to the W.T. Young Library, and he mentioned that there was an article in the Lexington Herald. Well, I found it. It was January 9th, 2000. And there were pictures. And now the house had been covered. You have to understand, it's 250-year-old logs. But over the years, there was plank siding, and then there was a vinyl siding added, and then the structure was actually added a single story. So when you looked at it from the road and earlier pictures that I've later found, It was a two-story on one side and a single story on the other, attached, no garage. So when they were tearing it down, the single-story side was far more modern. But then they started removing the sidings on the two-story, and it was designed as what they called a blockhouse, and it was designed for the early frontier. The second story wasn't floored; there were landings that you could shoot from, so it was a defensive position using the second floor, the height of these blockhouses, and usually they were designed for the corners or in the middle of these forts, mm-hmm. you know. So, with the dating and with Daniel Boone Bryan, Captain William Bryan's son, coming back and being recognized as the heir to that original settlement warrant that his father had purchased in January of 1780, and he was killed 4 months later. So that's where it picked up, and they were still having hostilities with the different tribes. It just wasn't just the Shawnee out of Ohio or the Cherokee from now North Carolina. There were many more other Indian tribes. They were all fighting. It was their hunting grounds. And again, you still had the war. Mm-hmm. So you had allegiances. And so, and then after that war, there were still some hard feelings. And I guess those hostilities probably didn't really end till 1800.
So we have the cabin.
Yes.
We know that the logs are dated yes. around statehood. We know that it's a two-story, probably the corner of a, or potentially a blockhouse, maybe the start of a fort, maybe mm-hmm. some other piece. So you have all of these questions
right.
about it.
Right,
how
right.
did you go about researching, trying to get these answers about provenance, about title?
It started, great question. Well, when we located the cemetery, spring of 2023, we hadn't contacted Jerry until November. And so I didn't have any guidelines on the cabin yet. So we were researching the cemetery and the and those who were interned there. So I was reaching out to my mother-in-law's DAR, and then she shared some names in the Lexington area. She's in Western Kentucky. She said, you need to reach out to the DAR members and the SAR members. She goes, they will help you. And that sort of started me in the proper research mindset, because it did come in handy in going back and looking at these deeds and finding out who these families were. And because as Alan and I were speaking earlier, if you had four brothers, and if it was William, Samuel, Joseph, well, each
maybe
one of the
James.
Brothers, James, yeah. John, then each brother, if they had four sons, they would name them the same names.
Mm-hmm.
So,
infuriating, from a research angle.
Absolutely. So now you have to go and look at the wills, mm-hmm. and you have to read the beneficiaries. So there's just a lot of reading. And to go back to what you asked is you know, I reached out to with Stuart Sanders in Frankfurt. You know, I found later a gentleman by the name of Neil Hammond, who was just unbelievable. He's since passed. I would have loved to have sat and talked with him in all the research and that he's provided for us to the present day. And you, Mandy, you were your name was given to me. Susan Miller, who works at the Waveland Museum, and so many, the girls down in Jessamine County Clerk's Office, the Fayette County Clerk's Office, the Transylvania University, the curators and the librarians there, W.T. Young Libraries, and then getting online and discovering the Shane Draper papers, which is what I'm right now digging into. Because they've been digitized, a little bit easier to research, and it's just phenomenal. And these were two Presbyterian ministers, of mm-hmm. course, in the 1800s that were interviewing pioneer families and getting their stories. And they've documented them, and they've been archived. Just fabulous, you know, living history mm-hmm. in document form. And then, of course, the state of Virginia, with all their records, because you have to remember, we were Virginia until 1792. And we're talking about dates of 1774 up to 1792. So everything was still housed and approved and titled and granted in Virginia. And so, yes, it's just been a journey.
And you've been able to establish that you feel pretty confident.
Like, yes.
Right. So,
am I 100% certain?
Right.
No.
No. And we never are, right?
No.
But you feel pretty confident that William Boone Bryan, not William Boone, Daniel Boone Bryan, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that Daniel Boone Bryan, Captain William Bryan's son,
yes,
came to this spot, came back and claimed this land,
yes,
and built this cabin.
Yes.
And that it is a precursor, or maybe where he lived,
yes,
while the early, before way before Waveland,
yes,
but before the before Waveland.
Great yeah. Point. You're on point. So he and his mother and his siblings left after the last siege of Bryan Station in 1780. And then, it was continuously being attacked. And when they would go out on searching for food, they were just being ambushed. And so Mary Bryan, Daniel Boone's sister, mm-hmm. who was married to Captain William Bryan, said, "We got to go back to the Yadkin Valley in North Carolina. We're just going to be massacred." So they went back, and then they stayed there through the Revolutionary War. And then after the war, yes, Mary and then Daniel Boone Bryan, Captain William Bryan's son, came back. 1785, stayed at Marble Creek down southern Fayette County, now southern Fayette mm-hmm. County. And he approached the courts and said, "I would like to pick up where my father left off." He paid for this land, the 400-acre settlement, as well as the 1,000-acre preemption warrants, and it's rightfully mine. And so it was titled to him, recognized by Governor Beverly Randolph in 1787, and then he was actually granted that land in 1789. Well, he had to be living on the property. You have to take possession of it, still continue making corn. And I believe he probably built this cabin, probably with the help of his uncle, Daniel Boone, and others. And then in 1790, he built his stone house, which to this day, part of that footer and foundation is part of the Waveland, now museum or home, that Daniel Boone Bryan's son Joseph built in 1840s.
Right, so we have a lineage
yes.
of the Bryan family on this acreage
yes.
that we can track and feel pretty confident about. This is an early settlement. And you've done the time, if someone comes to you, you can show them all of this.
I have so many rabbit holes and binders. I was telling Alan, I'm kind of proud to show people.
It's really impressive, some of the maps you've been able to
yes.
recreate and those pieces.
Yeah.
But there are some questions that still linger in your research. Can you tell us a little bit about what you don't feel as confident about or what you still have questions?
We know from the 1774 military warrants, General Adam Stevens and Alexander McKee, those are the two tracks that this cabin came off of. And we have the overlays and the boundaries. I've even employed an engineer to recreate exactly those from the legal descriptions of those deeds of the boundaries of the 400 and 1,000 acre, how it overlays those two particular two tracks, 2,000 acres apiece. I have that. Then you skip forward, Mandy, to 1804, 1808 era, where the records weren't destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
See, in 1803, the county clerk's office of Levi Todd burned in 1803. And there's a famous period of that era of documents that were destroyed and damaged were from 1784 to 1803. Well, like we talked earlier, is that even though you were warranted the land and you had surveys done, it was many, many years later till you actually received title and then you were officially recognized and granted those lands, see? Well, in those interims, once you were warranted that property, they immediately started selling.
Mm-hmm.
And they had assignees, the famous Elijah Craig out of Georgetown and his brothers. They were assignees. They were the early form of real estate agents. Because a lot of these individuals who were granted these lands, they weren't coming to Kentucky. They were in Virginia.
Right.
They had their plantations and their homes. All they knew about the frontier of Fincastle County, Virginia, was it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Sell it. Sell what you can and send me the money. And so that gap, that really hurt in my title chain of trying to find, you know, that transfer of ownership from those original 1774 boundaries to present day.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, once I got into the 1810s, 1812s, it was no problem. I got that title chain all the way to present day. But those gaps, they're still there. And now that the burnt records have been digitized, it really helps. And when I find a little free time, I go in and I look, and I'm finding what I'm looking for.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
you know, some people might react and say, well, why are you spending all of this time on something that's already been rebuilt and these people who are long gone? Why does a story like this matter to our understanding of Fayette County, of Lexington, of who we are today?
Yeah, well, we keep referring. I personally enjoy, and since then I've found patriots as my ancestors, and now I'm a member of the Sons of the Revolution of the Kentucky chapter, and it's exciting, and I'm still finding ancestors. You know, if you go six, seven generations above, well, let's see, six generations, you have 126 grandparents,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is phenomenal. And then you go to the next generation, now you have 250-some, right? So in that time period. So I just have a great appreciation for history, more so now. And then with this cabin, and with what Jason has done, you know, the preservation, it does matter. And it's just a reminder of, you know, what our ancestors went through, you know, to survive. You know, they just wanted to raise their families, carve out communities, and they had to fight, you know, war, disease. Then you had the land disputes, and then just everything. We just don't really appreciate what it was that in our founding years, what made it today.
Yeah, so
it's just an appreciation.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that's so compelling when you tell this story and when we learn about all of the work that you did is that sort of struggle, right? That we often tell revolutionary era history or founding era history as this great adventure and things just worked. We planted some corn and things worked out. And look, now we have a big city and it's awesome.
Oh,
but
man.
What you've been able to show in the records,
yes,
and in the way that this cabin came together and the struggles of the Bryan family, like, it's not a linear story.
No.
We're here and we're gone and there's loss along the way and there's rebuilding. And if we just told the Bryan family story from, you know, Joseph Bryan's Raveland,
mm-hmm,
then there's a loss of all that led to it.
Right. The fortitude.
Exactly.
And just the sheer willingness to put up with that existence.
Right.
It was brutal. And it's just really difficult at times during the day, just, you know, as you ponder and think about it. It's like, my goodness, you know, was it really worth it?
And I think about it in your search too, right? Like, so many researchers will have a really good question and then be like, oh my God, I am not searching burnt records and Virginia and Jessamine County and Fayette County. It doesn't matter that much.
Well, I think you know, Jason and I think it's more of keeping my word. from the very beginning, I said, this is going to take me 2 months. And what my goal was to get provenance.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're along the way, I'm actually gathering evidence as almost if I'm going to go to in front of a jury trial.
Mm-hmm.
I have to have evidence, very good evidence, documented living history evidence, to prove what I'm assuming is what we were told.
Right.
And so I'm 90% there. I'm pretty certain because the timelines are so important.
Mm-hmm.
And as I discovered, and it it checks off. You know, it's like, okay, he came back. Oh, he got titled. Oh, here's where the cabin was. Here's the boundaries. It's just that gap, Mandy, mm-hmm. of that. There's some lost records. I don't know if they'll be found, but I want to know the whole story.
Right. I'm a true historian. Always. We're never satisfied. So this is all of this is incredible. It's not the full story.
Oh, no.
You will be speaking at Waveland.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that Susan Miller, she's arranged. Waveland has they have their teas. And I think that's wonderful. And it's just opportunities for those who are interested, curious about history. They have different presentations and presenters of a myriad of subjects. So ours will be August 27th. And I will be presenting, you know, more of the details of this journey. And then it'll make sense. Because what happens is you get fixated on, say, for instance, this Adam Stevens, the 2,000 acres. Well, I got to find out who this guy is, right? And who is he? And so you go down that rabbit hole. And then so you're going down and then forward, backwards through these timelines. Who were you? When did you get the land? And now who has it now?
Mm-hmm.
And so then, oh, you got to have a neighbor. All right. Alexander McKee. Oh, my. He was the complete 180 opposite, whereas Colonel Stevens mm-hmm. at the time was loyal to King George in the French Indian War. Well, 1775, next year, now he joins the Continental Army, and he's back with George Washington on his staff. And the guy next door, your neighbor, he stays loyal to the crown.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's your enemy. You know, it's just amazing.
Right.
And so going back and forth through these timelines of these different families, it's necessary. It's long, but you have to do that
mm-hmm.
or you're not going to get the full picture.
Right. It's as much the people as the structure or those documents can seem very boring and transactional, but they're telling us so much about the people who are in them.
Absolutely. And going back to the Shane Draper mm-hmm. Manuscripts that were saved. They were both Presbyterian ministers, as I think I mentioned earlier. And those records are in the Wisconsin Historical Society. And to read through those, oh, my goodness. You know, living history
mm-hmm.
and written in the vernacular and then reading cursive, you know. And we have our slang,
mm-hmm.
Eastern Kentucky or mm-hmm. Appalachian Scottish Highland slang. And now you're reading this in cursive, and you're there. It's 1815, and this gentleman, this minister, is scribing and documenting his conversations with, you know, Mary Boone Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to read it, you're reading what they actually lived.
Right.
And just the existence. And you just sort of disassociate yourself, and you just get catapulted back in that time period, you know. I love it. So anyway, that's me.
So Waveland on August 27th.
Yes.
Is there any other public?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I approach this as a realtor. I'm not a historian. I have great respect for those who, you know, this is your vocation, your passion. It wears you out.
It does. Emotionally, mentally, sometimes physically if you're chasing things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think after the tea, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. We maybe a small little a booklet, you know, to put it together. I'll have to have someone do that. I'm not a writer. I can't. And but I've got the research. I do. And I can tell about the gathering of the research, but it needs someone that has the penmanship and the professionalism that can actually tell the story better. Then eventually I'll probably donate it, because I have right now I have 9 2-inch binders that tells it, the rabbit holes. That's mm-hmm. why I look at them and I say, well, there's that rabbit hole and there's that rabbit hole. But one's just on the cabin and the history of it, and then the lands, and then the families, and it's something I've put together.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing it with us.
Sure.
And for, you know, this July is the 250th anniversary of the kind of founding of what becomes the United States with the signing of the Declaration, and it is these families that help make that possible and whose lives are intertwined with that fight for democracy, and being able to tell that with a physical structure and a family story.
I have to, you know, a shout out to Jason Justice as well. You know, he's just done a phenomenal job putting this back together, and without him, you know, this piece of early Kentucky architectural pioneer history, you know, it could have easily disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And he builds wonderful homes, obviously, you know, in his development out there next to Greenbrier. But it's a work of art that he was able to save it and put it back together. And that means a lot, I think, for those who can appreciate it. And, you know, it is his. It's on his private property. But at times he's willing to, you know, share that with a few people. And that's what we're going to do down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a year or so, we may have a little gathering out there. If we can get the recognition that I set out to do back in 2023, and maybe we can get us a historical marker.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what started all this.
Yeah.
So
that's incredible.
Where we are. That's where we are.
Yeah. It just occurred to me too. The Adam Rankin House
mm-hmm.
was around that same time, correct?
Yeah. There's all nuances.
In Lexington,
yeah.
Sort of, technically, maybe.
Yeah, you know, the earliest dwelling that still is extant, but it's moved,
mm-hmm.
was on High Street, now it's on Mill. But yeah, these log cabins exist. Transy has the Patterson Cabin on their mm-hmm. property. So you can see examples of it, of these structures mm-hmm. that survived for the
it's amazing.
It's incredible.
You know, 250-year wood, and it's still providing shelter.
Right.
You know?
Well, and you mentioned that, just to be real technical about
sure.
the cabin for a second, but it was in such good shape, you only had to replace a couple of the boards when it came.
Yeah, well, no, he actually, on the dovetails, some of them, you know, had rotted, and so he has actually reduced, you know, if you look back at the original footprint, now that we have something to fall back on, he cut probably on the longer logs, on the long walls, a foot and a half on each end, so, you know, he's taken 3 feet
mm-hmm.
away from the long wall logs. Those are for the header boards over the windows and the doors. Really, if you look at the cabin, it's all still the original wood. Now, the rafters, those are new.
Right.
Okay, for the roofing. And the flooring, that's new. It's Jason went out and purchased these woods. They're actually 100-year-old woods. So to keep in the, mm-hmm. you know, into the scheme of, you know, the authenticity, but they're repurposed woods that came out of a tobacco warehouse. I know one, and it's 100-plus years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, the actual logs, that's them. The front porch is new,
mm-hmm.
okay? Those logs, where did he procure those? I think those were 150-year-old. Logs that he procured from the Amish. But anyway, but yes, the actual roofing material, that's new.
Of course.
You know, the
yeah.
shake, that's
yeah.
new. The chimney, the stone, that's all new. Dry laid mm-hmm. and some mortar mix. He tried to keep it original, you know, to that period of time.
Yeah. It's incredible.
But the actual walls, though, that's the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we have that dendrochronology, you know, that Dr. Rochner, you know, performed, you know, where those 1792 logs were.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
And we can tell the passion, you know, earlier from the conversation, a passionate researcher has discovered all of this stuff because you saw this wood and you said, isn't that interesting? And most people would just kind of leave it at that. You went down the rabbit holes.
Yes,
and because
absolutely.
Of that, we have this story today.
It is. It is a good story, and I hope to share it, and I hope people can appreciate it. And those that are interested in, you know, early Kentucky history, but it's there, and it's the real deal, you know. And I think I have enough evidence. I think we can get Jason a plaque, you know, for his cabin. I sure hope so.
That would be great. Yes. That really would.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing it with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for the time, and it's just a great story. It really is.
Okay, Mandy, quick recap of some upcoming events at the museum.
Last couple of weeks to see Intersections, 250 years of Lexington history. August 5th at the Willow, Lost Lexington, I think the Phoenix Hotel, and other great things. You can pre-register for that at 6 or at 7 p.m. And of course, back to Lex Future, our signature fundraising event will be August 29th from 7 to 10 at Limestone Hall in the Old Courthouse.
Come in costume, and we've got the we'll put a link to where to get the tickets on our website, and you can go also with this podcast. We'll include that link as well. So, wow. Hey, we've got a lot to talk about in the next few months, that's for sure.
Never a dull day.
Making history. Discovering history, making history, and bringing it all to you monthly on WUKY and the Lex Talk History Podcast, when we will talk to you again very, very soon.
You've been listening to Lex Talk History, a monthly podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Lex Talk History from the podcast page at WUKY.org. And if you haven't done so already, please make plans to visit the Lexington History Museum soon. Get started on your tour at lexhistory.org.